And that does it for today's broadcast. Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Berkshire, Ruf Abdelkaddous, John Hamilton, Elizabeth Press, Yoruba Richin, Aaron Maté, Lee Burek, and Jen Utes, Mike DeFilippo and Nick Marsilio, our engineers. Special thanks to Uri Galed. This weekend, tomorrow, I will be in Stony Brook, New York, introducing Alice Walker. On Saturday, I will be in Miami, and on Sunday in Washington, D.C. You can go to our website, democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
And it's just about 6 o'clock on a Tuesday evening, which means, once again, it's time for Off the Wall. Enough of that. Come on. It's time for the celebration to continue. Celebrations of the people throughout the streets of the United States of America, here in the studios of WUSB, on the campus of the State University of New York at Stony Brook. It's party time. Oh, yeah. For those of you who aren't here, maybe you don't know how exciting it's been since last week, since last Election Day, when we kicked the Republicans out and we ushered in a whole new era. Things are going to change now. It's going to be a different world. There is hope once again. And peace, prosperity, all that fun stuff looms around the corner. I don't know if you, maybe you've seen it on television, especially those of you overseas. Perhaps you didn't see this, but literally, you drive down the streets and you come across people dancing and lighting off fireworks and just celebrating because, yeah, exactly. People in the studio, listen to this. All right. Okay, get out of here now, please. Not your show. It's my show. So, yeah, you're there, you're watching the television, and it's just, it's incredible seeing how this has happened so quickly, how things have changed. Yeah, it's simply staggering, it's inspirational, it's, dare I say it, it's beautiful. It really is. But I'd like to just say one thing. No, oh far. Here we go again. Yeah. All right, all right, all right. Can everybody just sit down in the back? This room is not big enough for everybody. I know. Okay, come on. I'm going to have to turn down the microphone. Okay, all right. Stay calm now, please. There's just one comment I want to make. No, please, it doesn't take much to set you people up. I just have one thing I'd like to say. Oh. At some point, the energy has to run out. Restraints in place, good. All right, what I've been trying to say for the last week, it's all fun and good. The dancing, it's good exercise. It's wonderful to get outside and to hug people and swing around, all that kind of thing. But the only point I'm trying to make is you realize it's all a crock, right? No, seriously, this is nonsense. All right. Clearly, my message is not. All right, listen. Enough of the long faces. What I'm trying to tell you. I knew this was going to happen. All right. Let's turn down the music. Listen. Everybody, just calm down already. It's not me. All right. I'm not the one making it like this. No. All right. Can we just have a little bit of civilized discourse here? Because this is really getting kind of silly. Look, it was an election. It was a good election, all right? And it was good news. There's no question about that. And I'm happy with the results. I am. I really am. But the thing is, if you really expect things to change dramatically based on that particular result, I'm afraid you're hopelessly naive. Look. It's the reality of the situation. Governments do not change overnight. It's a process. Ugh. Why do I bother? Why do I bother even trying? Let's at least put something a little bit more appropriate on so that we can maybe get into the mood of where we actually... Shut up! Everyone just calm down. Talk this hour. We're going to take phone calls, and hopefully we'll realize that it's the first step in a long process. Look, this whole Iraq situation, it's not going to go away. It's not going to go away. It's probably going to get worse. And here's the thing, okay? And this is where. When I say this, people start to get a little upset. Even a little more upset than they are right now. The Democrats are probably going to lose in 2008. And here's why. And here's why. Come on. Guys, give me a chance to speak. Listen. They're going to lose. It's going to be their own fault, too, all right? I'll tell you that right now. That's right. It's going to be their own fault. Because look what they're going to do. Yeah, they're going to be in power for 2 years. They're going to have the House. They're going to have the Senate. Yeah, could you please just let them out so they can, like, break something in the newsroom? Thank you. Thank God for security. All right, seriously, unlock that door. Thank you. Thank God for locks. Thank God for security. It's what we need in this day and age. Basically, okay, 2 years of power for the Democrats. What is that going to result in? It's going to result in more failure in Iraq, except this time the Democrats will be blamed. And then 2008 will come along, and somebody like Giuliani or McCain is going to be running against somebody like Hillary Clinton. Come on already. This is the best the Democrats can do. It's being handed to you on a silver platter. And these are the candidates you're talking about. Now, Barack Obama would be a great candidate. Do I think he's actually going to be taken seriously by the powers that be? No, I don't. Not right now, anyway. We're not ready for that. We're barely ready for a Catholic president, let alone a woman, let alone an African-American. But I guess we'll just have to see what happens. But that's my prediction. That's unfortunate. I see the writing on the wall. This actually could be a power play by the Republicans. Yeah, let's lose. Let's take the fall in 2006 so we get back the White House in 2008 with a real Republican who knows what he's doing. And that, my friends, can be rather scary. But either way, don't look for changes in Iraq. I just don't see that happening. And I'm sorry. The light's being turned off, and people are getting all somber now and getting back the pre-election day faces. But somebody had to say it. Somebody had to go out there and say that, okay, you know, it's a step, but it's not enough of a step, and it's probably not going to result in anything in the future, unless they come up with something courageous, you know? Unless they try to impeach President Bush, that would be great. Do you think they'll ever try to do that? No, I don't think so. I don't think Nancy Pelosi has the guts to do that. I don't think we're going to put Rumsfeld on trial for war crimes and send Bush over to The Hague. I just don't see it happening. It should happen. It should happen. I've talked to so many people on the right and the left who are so completely outraged by what has happened to our Constitution, what has happened to our freedoms, what has happened to our country's image and the whole rest of the world. And they would turn him over to the international courts in a second, because that's where he belongs. That's where they all belong. These are real crimes that we're talking about. Just the existence of Guantanamo Bay alone is something that outrages so many of us. The fact that we have this prison where we hold people for years without charging them with any crime, we just assume they're all terrorists. And that's okay. That's okay. We can suspend everything. We can suspend all the rules. They don't have any rights because they're not Americans. And we can kidnap people from other countries because, hey, we're Americans and we can do whatever we want. And as long as the football keeps getting played every Sunday, that's fine and dandy with the rest of us. Well, I don't know. Maybe it is. But until we start speaking out really loudly and vocally, and not accepting the results of an election as some kind of an answer, I don't see things changing very much. I might be wrong. Maybe I'm wrong. I'd love to hear opinions. We haven't been able to take phone calls in the last few weeks because of the fundraiser. But guess what? The fundraiser is over. And I believe we exceeded our goal. Am I right? I think we exceeded our goal, which is terrific. And I want to thank everybody who called in for Off the Hook. I'm sorry, for Off the Wall. Get the right show here, Emmanuel. Yeah, pledge support for the various shows that we did, including the Shadow of a Long Island presentation. It just was really good to hear from so many of our listeners. And I think if you still want to pledge for those premiums, including the autographed copy of Shadow of a Long Island, you can still do it if you go to our website, wusb.fm, or if you call our hotline, 631-632-6498. That's correct, right? That's our hotline? Can I try it?
Hi, you've reached WUSB's listener feedback line.
Yeah, okay, it is. And you notice I dialed less numbers there because, when you're local, you don't have to dial as many digits. It's just the way it works. This is the way all phones used to work, in fact. You used to be able to just dial the last four digits of a phone number if you were in the same exchange. Now you can't even dial the last seven digits. You have to dial the area code in many places. But our phone number here is 631-632-9872, 631-632-WUSB. And we encourage people to call in, share whatever opinions they have over this whole Election Day thing, whether or not we actually have turned the corner. You know, I was in Canada a little over a week ago, bringing the smart car up there. It's still up there, by the way. I'm so sad. The smart car is in a different country. And so many people are asking. You know, they say, hey, Emmanuel, where's the smart car? They don't care about me. You know, I could disappear for 2 years. As long as they see the smart car driving around the streets, they're happy. And the smart car is not in the country. So when it comes back, hopefully in a week or so, they'll be happy again. But it's gone up there to get a service, and it's coming back down on its own. It's a smart car, after all. And anyway, I was in Canada. I don't know why I went off on that tangent. I was in Canada, and they're already talking about throwing out their government that they elected only a year ago. The conservative government, because it's not doing a good job. And we've got to wait. We've got to wait until 2008, and we knew we had to wait until 2008 and 2000. So it's really silly. It's a wacky system that we have here. But it's the system we're stuck with. So let's see, any other Election Day things that happened. If you have not seen Hacking Democracy yet, I strongly, strongly urge you to go out there and see this film. It's available all over the place on the Internet, and it's being played on HBO. And it's about electronic voting machines, which I have yet to play with. I have yet to actually see one myself. Kind of ironic, isn't it? But these things are capable of being manipulated in ways that you may have had nightmares about, but assume that it wasn't possible. Well, it is possible, and they show you right there. The people at Black Box Voting and various other experts play with these things, and it's something frightening. And I'm sure elections have been manipulated. Hey, maybe the Democrats didn't really win. Maybe they just got access to the voting machines this time. One thing that kind of bothers me, there's not enough complaining about that going on because the Democrats won this time. There should be, because these things... These things are not to be trusted. And this isn't some kind of Luddite technology or I'm sorry, Luddite philosophy here that I'm spouting, where any kind of technology is something that has to be feared and avoided at all costs. There just needs to be oversight. There needs to be a way to see the actual source code. There needs to be a way to basically double-check everything. We don't have that. We don't have that. Companies like Diebold keep their source code to themselves and don't share it with anybody, and we don't know what's going on. We just assume that the counting is taking place properly. And it's been proven to be very easy not to do that. So, yeah, if you have not seen that film, Hacking Democracy, please get out there and see it. It's consider it your civic duty to go out there and see it. Also, your civic duty is to go out and see Borat. I said that last week. I said that was the most amazing subversive film I've seen in a long time. And it is. It really is. But, of course, the fallout is starting to hit us now. those people have no sense of humor whatsoever. Borat, of course, being the fake, yes, the fake Kazakh... is he a journalist? I don't even know if he claims to be a journalist. I guess he would be a journalist, then. A fake Kazakh journalist who goes around... getting people to say things they never would say ordinarily if they knew that people were listening to them. And I think that's just great because it shows people as they really are. It shows how they react to certain situations. Some people are getting upset, including some of the people in the film. There are these frat kids who were picked up, or actually they picked Borat up on the highway. It was staged. They paid the guys to do this. They said, okay, pick up this guy and talk to him on camera. And they basically let forth with all kinds of racist and sexist remarks. And now they're surprised. They're surprised that that was actually captured on film and their faces are the ones saying these things. And they're actually trying to sue. So I don't know. I see no case there, but other people are upset too. People who said even worse things. And what I don't get, though, what I really don't get are the people who don't understand the humor. They see it as racist and sexist. Yeah, that's the point. That's the point. This is not something that's spouting those views. It's showing how those views are prevalent in our society. It's showing the lunatics in charge of religious groups and government people and what some of the people out there are thinking is actually going on, what the real agenda of the Bush administration is. Let's see what some of the comments have been so far. This guy, what's his name again? Pat Haggerty. He agreed to be filmed for what he thought was a benign documentary on his client's journey across America, his client being Borat, who he had been trying to teach humor to, how to say funny things and how not to say funny things. As cameras rolled, his client told raunchy stories in garbled English and laughed heartily at the expense of handicapped people. And then Haggerty said, "I'm starting to smell a rat. Each passing minute, I'm going, you know, this can't be real." Confused, he ended up playing along. He later figured out, thanks to his son, who actually watches HBO and has seen Borat before, that's when he found out that he'd been duped. He said they were exercising a First Amendment right, and he said he enjoyed the movie. This Sacha Cohen, that's the comedian who plays Borat, he's going to make $87 gazillion, and, you know, good for him. I'm just sorry that he had to do it in such a way that he allowed people to make jerks out of themselves, exposing their character flaws. Well, you know what? They already were jerks. They're just now jerks in public. And we get to see how people act in certain situations. Now, this is a good one. Kathy Martin, she runs an etiquette school in Birmingham, Alabama. She was also left out of the joke. Even though she was gracious and calm when Borat showed her nude photos of his son, Martin admitted she was taken aback by his shtick during their on-camera meeting. "Unless you can figure it out for yourself, you have no way of knowing you have been tricked into being part of a childish prank with an R rating attached." Yeah, well, that's the whole point. Unless you can figure it out yourself, what do you expect him to be hanging a sign around his neck? Continuing here, "And even if you figure it out, you've signed a release that Mr. Cohen's people say relinquishes any rights on your part to take action against them." It was intelligent. It was the right way to do it. Ronald Miller of Natchez, Mississippi, was baffled by the ruse. He and his wife attended a dinner at a plantation house, which they were told would be an interview with an Eastern European television reporter coming to Natchez to film social customs in the South. Borat disturbed guests by making anti-Semitic remarks and saying slavery was wonderful. But you know what? They didn't really act all that outraged when he did that. You know when they acted outraged? When he brought a dinner guest, a woman posing as an African-American prostitute, into the house. And that's when they called the cops. So that tells you something. That shows you how people really are. And the thing that really gets me about that is that particular sketch where Borat is trying to learn etiquette from people and doing outrageous things and gauging their reactions, that had been performed twice before. It was on DVD two different times, once in England and once in the United States. So I'm surprised he actually was able to get away with it a third time. I'm sure he can't do anything with the Borat character anymore without people knowing who it is. So that's that film and the Hacking Democracy film, I think, are the two that you should go out there and see. The Death of a President, that's not doing so well. In fact, I don't think that's in theaters anymore. And I have yet to see it. I have it downloaded someplace. Have to find it first. And according to this particular story, Death of a President dies at box office. The provocative film, which imagines the assassination of George W. Bush, bombed at the North American box office with a meager $282,000 grossed from 143 theaters in its first weekend. You know, it used to be when $250,000 was a lot of money, but now it's nothing. The pseudo-documentary played at 91 U.S. theaters and 52 Canadian cinemas during its first 3 days of release, averaging an estimated $1,970 per screen. That's a very poor opening, according to industry experts. The per-screen average is considered the best initial barometer of box office success for a limited-release film. I think most people are just afraid to go and see a film about our own president being assassinated. I mean, wouldn't you expect Secret Service agents to be taking a picture of everybody who walked in? I think most people downloaded it. But, you know, the film just wasn't that good from what I'm hearing. And it is a disturbing subject, no question about that. No matter what you think of Bush having a film like that, where an actual person is assassinated, that, I don't know, for me that seems to be stepping over the line a bit. There are other people, I know, it's not stepping nearly close enough to the line, but it's just a matter of taste. Lawyers for inmates of Iraq's Abu Ghraib prison in Guantanamo Bay have filed a lawsuit in Germany. They did that today, in fact, against outgoing U.S. Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld, hoping his resignation and testimony from a former general will help prosecute him for war crimes. You might have heard part of this on Democracy Now! Right before this program. Former U.S. Army Brigadier General Janis Karpinski, who was the one-time commander of all U.S. military prisons in Iraq, said she would testify against her superiors because only a handful of low-ranking soldiers have been convicted over the abuse at the Abu Ghraib jail. Kapinski, who was relieved of her command and demoted to colonel last year, said she wanted to be a voice for my soldiers. And I think it's fascinating how someone like Kapinski could have easily been the scapegoat in the eyes of all of us. But instead, we're listening to what she has to say, and what she has to say is fascinating. Now, she's laying the blame on her superiors, on the system in general, and how this is indicative of a much bigger issue. It goes to show that there are people with some degree of conviction in the military, and sometimes they're actually in charge of something. Anyway, that'll be interesting to see how that goes. And now that Rumsfeld is on his way out, who knows? Who knows what we'll be seeing in future months? Okay, we're going to get to some. Actually, there's something I wanted to play. Yeah, this is. We were talking about this a couple of weeks ago. We've been talking about it throughout. About how the military is out there constantly trying to replenish their ranks because it's been such a disaster, and so many people have gotten killed and injured, and so many other people don't want any part of it, and so they're not joining up. And it's a real problem. It's a real problem. If the military has to do something else, it's going to turn into an emergency problem, I think. Because we're so drained from this. So the military is going around redoubling their efforts. Not quite sure what that means, but they are redoubling their efforts to get more people, get new blood to spill. And I find that particularly offensive, and I know a lot of our listeners do too, because they've written to us. When they approach people who are young and naive, in a good way, because when you're young, you're supposed to be naive. It's the only time you can get away with it. And they approach them. They approach them in the malls. They approach them in the schools. They even call their homes. They send them mail. And to me, I consider that predatory behavior, and I think it should be dealt with the same way as any other predator that stalks your kids. You don't let them anywhere near them. You find out where they are, and you prevent them from getting near them. Wouldn't it be nice if the military was forbidden from coming within 500 feet of a school? Or anybody under the age of 18? That'd be nice, wouldn't it? Anyway, this past Sunday, occasionally this happens. This past Sunday, The Simpsons became relevant again by airing what I thought was a brilliant segment on the military doing just that. And I'm going to play an excerpt from this. This actually is the sound of a couple of military recruiters in a mall attempting to get what they think are dumb teenagers to join up, and what happens immediately afterwards.
Idle teens at 1 o'clock.
Intercepting in 3, 2. Sup, guys? Heard the new rap CD?
Yo, I don't know what I dig more. Hip-hop, crunk, or serving my country.
Are you guys hitting on us?
No, man. We just want to talk to you about something near and dear to us.
What, being gay?
Close. The Army.
Because of exciting current events, the Army needs new members.
New members who want to earn money for college and see a part of the world that tourists never go to.
Doesn't the Army have to fight in wars?
Not wars. Global struggles.
You guys like globes.
Let's go, dudes.
Damn it! Even the dumbest teenagers in the dumbest town in the dumbest state know better than to join the Army.
Well, we'll just have to go younger.
What's this assembly for? A surprise Doodlebots concert?
Standardized test, standardized test, standardized test.
How many of you like video games?
Well, what if there was a violent video game that you could play for free? Plus, it's real life and not a game at all. Wouldn't that be slamming?
Who are these wonderful people?
And we brought along a movie. Do you guys know where we could find some awesome kids to show it to?
Dearborn, Michigan?
No, here!
You got it.
Okay, right about here, you see a film with a knight in shining armor pulling a sword out of a stone. And then it morphs into a helicopter that goes around shooting Nazis and Jason from Friday the 13th and even some Muslims. And now they land their helicopter and jump out and they become rock stars playing guitars.
Now, you can't legally join the Army till you're 18, but if you pre-enlist now, we will save you a spot in America's next unresolvable conflict.
Listen to those half-pencils scribble. Thanks for fitting us in, Sergeant Skinner.
Oh, I'd do anything for my beloved Army.
Well, how about re-enlisting?
How about you bite me?
Great news, Mom. I agreed to join the Army when I turn 18. What?
Okay, you can pretty much figure out what happens after this point.
So,
anyway, it's great to see The Simpsons actually do something relevant and cool and politically adept. And, yeah, you know, it's an important thing. It's an important issue. And I'm open to suggestion as to just how we all can fight this sort of thing. Because so many people were dragged into this current conflict, not knowing that they would be dragged into a conflict like that. And, of course, you could say, yeah, it's your own stupid fault. But you know what? When you're that age, you listen to what people say. You believe them. You trust them. And lots of times you're led down the wrong road and bad things happen as a result. So we need to prevent that from continuing to happen. And I think setting some standards, some rules, some regulations would be a good thing. On the subject of predators, you know, I got this piece of mail. I've never gotten this before. It's a Megan's Law notification. You ever seen one of these things? In accordance with the provision, it reads, Dear Parents, I guess they just send that to everybody. In accordance with the provisions of Megan's Law, please be advised that we have been notified by your local police department that a moderate risk level 2 sex offender is residing in your community. The offender has been determined to have had deviant sexual intercourse with a female age 11 on more than one occasion. And below is a photocopied picture provided by the police department. And there's this grainy picture of this dude with a mustache and looks kind of evil and sneaky and everything you would expect a child predator to look like. Is that an Army uniform? No, it's it's kind of scary. You blow this picture up and you put it up on a wall and you won't be getting any trick-or-treaters this year, I'll tell you that. Anyway, the above information is all we are permitted to provide on a level 2 offender. It is our sincere hope that this information is valuable to you. Now, what I'm wondering is, what in God's name are you supposed to do with this? There's no name. There's no address. All there is a fuzzy picture of some guy who could have shaved the mustache, cut his hair, gotten all kinds of facial implants or whatever. Although, you know what? There's always somebody who's going to figure out who it is anyway. It happens all the time. You know, someone is on the FBI's most wanted list, and they go to another part of the country, they dye their hair a different color, they grow it long, They have Hispanic traits implanted into their face so that they look completely different. And they get a sex change operation. Yet somehow, some do-gooder out there says, hey, I got the guy you're looking for. I could meet somebody, and then an hour later, I won't recognize their face because I'm bad with faces. I'm that bad with faces. So if I ever was to witness a crime or something like that, and I was brought down to the police station, and they open up that book where everybody apparently is listed, everybody who ever committed any kind of a crime, or where I talk to the guy and he draws a picture based on my descriptions, you wouldn't get anything near what the person actually looked like. And it bothers me when I watch these TV programs, everybody always gets it right. You know, everybody always is able to say, yeah, he's about 5'11", medium build, and he had a scar on the left side of his cheek, and he had inch-long sideburns and hazel eyes. You know, all I know is he was a humanoid, okay, and maybe I can remember sort of what he sounded like, and, okay, was he black or was he white? I could probably get that one right. But that's about it. That's about it. And I wonder, am I the unusual one, or is everybody just much more perceptive in noticing these things? I'll tell you, watching programs like NYPD Blue, it really gives you an inferiority complex because every single person there seems to know what to do. You ever watch that? Whenever they are telling a story, first of all, they always throw a pencil and pad at the person and say, write it down. And they always just write down the story like, well, how am I supposed to write it down, I would say. Is it supposed to be, what, first-person narrative? Do you want it in a play form? How? What exactly are you looking for here? That's what I would do. And I'd get beaten up by Sipowitz. But they also always get addresses. For instance, who do you think is the person who kidnapped this woman, if it's not you? Well, it could be this guy, Randy, who hangs around and pushes a grocery cart sometimes on the East End. I see. Have you seen this person often? Yeah, I hang out occasionally. Sometimes we go and we smoke crack. As long as that doesn't get used against me, I'll admit to that. All right, write down his address. And they always know his address. They always know his address. I mean, I don't know the addresses of people that I know very well. People I hang out with every week. I don't know their addresses. I don't even know what street they live on. I know approximately where they live, but I couldn't give you their address. In fact, I couldn't even give you their phone number because everything is a speed dial these days. The most I could do is point to them and say, there they are. And I'm not even that good at that. So anyway, as far as this sexual offender in my neighborhood, you know, here's my thought on this. If the guy has served his time and he's not deemed to be a threat anymore, shouldn't that be the end of it? And if he is a threat, then why is he out? It seems like you can't really have it both ways. Where is the Megan's Law thing for people who are murderers who are let out? I don't see that. I don't see notices, hey, this person was a mass murderer, but he killed a couple of people, and he robbed a 7-Eleven, and now he's out, and he's living in your neighborhood. I'd be very concerned about people who are convicted of breaking and entering, somehow living in a neighborhood where they could do that again, or any other criminals. But again, if they have served their time, if they're not deemed to be a threat anymore, then I guess you kind of have to accept that. What if this guy was actually a nice person? It'd be very hard for him to survive. Actually, it'd be very easy because all you have to do is change your face a little bit. And I don't know. I don't know if anybody could find this guy based on this fuzzy photo. What's really funny, though, is that the person who signed this this letter is Deputy Superintendent. I'm not going to give his name because I don't want to give too much specific information. And I think he's from a school district. And he signs his name. Underneath it says Deputy Superintendent. Underneath that, in small letters, it says Sexual Offender. Now, I know what that means. It means that that's the title of the letter. The letter is about a sexual offender. But if you look at it literally, it's the guy's name, Deputy Superintendent, Sexual Offender. He's labeling himself as a sexual offender by the way this thing is laid out. Unless, oh my goodness, could it be this guy? Maybe this guy is subtly trying to tell us that he's got a problem. And all right, you know what? I'm going to look into this a little bit more and see if I can get a picture of the guy who wrote the letter. I'll get back to you on it. Okay, our phone number is 631-632-9872. We'd love to hear from you. Those of you who haven't been able to call in the last couple of weeks, please give us a call. We'd love to hear from you. And tell us. Tell us what is on your mind, what has happened to you in the past few weeks. You know, one of the things we didn't get to talk about very much, which was on my mind, do you remember, and it's faded out of the press so quickly, it's really kind of unbelievable, that joke that Kerry told, you know, the joke about people having to study hard or else they'll wind up in Iraq. And then he backtracked and tried to say, well, you know, I was making a bad joke about Bush. I was actually referring to Bush, because if you don't study hard, you might wind up being a president who starts a war in Iraq and can't get out of it. The lamest excuse I think I've ever heard. What I don't understand, and this is one of the reasons why I think the Democrats are going to blow it, why not stand up and say, yeah, that's what I meant? Because those people who don't study are going to be victimized by the predators out there who say, you only have one chance, and that's to join the military. And we'll pay for your education, and we'll give you a career, and we'll teach you some new words, and we'll give you a skill in how to shoot things. And that's how you're going to wind up. What is wrong with saying that? Because I think I'm almost certain that's what Kerry meant. And it happens to be true. It's unfortunate, but it happens to be true. That is what happens to a lot of people. And maybe, you know, if we stood up to that fact, if we owned up to it, it wouldn't happen so often. All right, so that's what I wanted to say about that. I'd like to know if anybody has any other opinions. Dear Emmanuel, I know it was on your mind, but the little tirade about the number of people killed in Iraq seemed a bit out of place. We don't know how many Iraqis have died in Iraq. The studies have wildly huge ranges in how many they think have died, and there doesn't seem to be any real foundation by what they're basing these numbers on. I mean, that Johns Hopkins study that came out had a range of over 600,000 between its high and low margins. This is from our best and brightest. My God, where do these numbers come from? The various other death toll watch groups I've seen ranged from 50 to 100K, and now suddenly they're saying 750,000. Come on, Emmanuel, these kinds of radical changes in numbers don't wash, especially with the study being published a month before elections. I know you're no Bush fan, and I'm certainly not a fan of the government, especially with the rapid erosion of our privacy rights, but I simply can't believe those kinds of numbers being attributed to our soldiers. Let's not forget the biggest killer of Iraqis are the lunatics with the bombs who aren't wearing a uniform. How can you go after Bush for the deaths caused by the other side? Oh, I can go after Bush for the deaths caused by the other side because he started the other side. There were no suicide bombers. There were no mass kidnappings and the horror that's going on a daily basis in Iraq. You had Saddam Hussein, an evil guy. You had a dictator who was hell to live under. But you know what? It was heaven compared to this. And you can't deny that. You can't deny that. As for the death toll, who knows? How do we ever find out what the death toll is? Who's counting the Iraqis? We're not counting the Iraqis. To us, they're all evil. They're all the same. They all deserve whatever they get. And if we ever do pull out of there, it's going to be their fault that their country's in a mess, not ours. And that's the insanity of it all. Anyway, continuing here. Sorry for the little rant, but it was an unexpected nerve you kind of tread on before the madness of hunting for your volume control sign. Greg from Tempe. Thanks, Greg, for writing in. Oh, yes, that reminds me of the volume control. We got some mail about that, too. This was the problem I had trying to figure out why one of my computers was constantly lowering the volume on its audio. You'd click on the volume control, and you'd see it just go all the way down on its own. And after trying to figure out everything, after listening to everybody's advice and reinstalling things and getting drivers to be trouble shot and all that kind of thing, I discovered that the telephone was actually leaning on a physical volume control knob that I didn't know existed that was attached to a cable. I really didn't know that existed. It was a very tiny volume control knob. It rubs some people the wrong way. I listened to your show while working today about your audio problem. What the hell are you doing on a hacker podcast if you don't seem to know how software works, if you don't seem to know about advanced troubleshooting, and if it ended up being a cabling problem? Your issues and ways you went about solving them only made you look like an ignorant animal. An ignorant animal? Why insult the animals? For God's sake. I stopped your show at 27 minutes. Moments where I got my laughs out of the way with your problem. Moments? I don't know what you're trying to say here. I think after I got my laughs out of the way, you solved your problem? Is that what you're trying to say? Seriously, if that stuff happens to you and you're podcasting under a hacker brand, let it go and never talk about it. That level of idiocy is between you and your troubled self. Signed, Alex. Well, Alex, let me tell you a couple of things. First of all, this show may appear on a podcast, but this is a radio program. We appear over the radio waves. You might be familiar with these things. You turn them on and you hear voices coming out of them. Maybe something else that you hear voices coming out of. And as for not talking about things, not talking about mistakes you make, not talking about things you overlooked, not talking about silly, ridiculous problems that happen to you, well, yeah, it might be the way you live your life. But for me, it's all I have. If I didn't talk about the stupid things I did, I'd be talking a whole lot less. And finally, you know what? I don't think it was that stupid, okay? I didn't know that thing even existed. I still don't know why it exists. I don't need to control the volume on the cable. I can control the volume in so many different ways. I don't need yet another volume control thing there. I didn't put that there. I didn't install that machine. I didn't know it was there. And I did find out what it was. Nobody even suggested anything similar to this through trial and error and leaning on various things. But yeah, okay, you're not listening anyway, so it doesn't matter. I can insult you and say all kinds of things. But hacker podcast, I don't even know what that is, a hacker podcast. That means our show is being broadcast and downloaded on the internet and someone has labeled it as a hacker show, fine. But if it is a hacker podcast, I think we can talk about all sorts of issues and not be ashamed. Seriously, if you go through your life and you don't admit that sometimes you get something wrong, what kind of person do you wind up being? Because people are going to see that you're getting things wrong. Now, speaking of hacker podcast, is our hacker podcast working? Actually, our hacker stream, is that working? Because I don't see any calls coming in. Have I offended everybody with the whole election reality check thing? I mean, I'm sorry, but it had to be said, you know, this is not the answer. Democrats aren't going to solve all the problems. It's going to be a lot more problems. It's going to be a lot more problems. Might as well get used to it. What's crazy is I honestly don't know where that's coming from. It's really difficult sometimes to get thoughts out without the decent soundproofing any radio station needs. With the doors closed. At the beginning of last night's show, you mentioned that WUSB doesn't have any satellite programming that takes over our airwaves. Later you said that this week's show was geared towards Democracy Now! Listeners. Not that I consider it a bad thing in any way, but isn't Democracy Now! Just such a satellite program that a mere 2 minutes earlier you said the station didn't have? Signed, Risk Taker. Well, Risk Taker, let me explain something to you as far as how that works. First of all, when I was speaking about the satellite programming taking over our airwaves, I'm talking about other radio stations where that is exactly what happens, where basically you throw a switch and the satellite plays for however many hours you throw the switch for. There's no local programming whatsoever. Democracy Now! Is a program. It's a syndicated program that comes our way every day. And just to be technical about it, we get it from a computer. We get it from the internet. We don't get it from the satellite. But we could. Good evening. You're on the air.
Yes. I just wanted to call and say that I think that this Democratic victory is important, but it'll only matter if people actually get out in the streets and in public forums like newspapers and actually start talking about the real issues. Uh-huh. And talk about the corruption and the need to install some economic fairness in this country.
Do you think that's going to happen?
If people actually get motivated enough to do something about it.
And do you think anything out there is going to motivate them? I mean, we have this war going on where people are dying every day. That doesn't seem to be doing it. We have civil liberties being taken away from us on a daily basis. What's it going to take?
Maybe if the Democrats screwed up bad enough, will actually get mad enough to demand something real instead of more partisan politics.
Or maybe we'll get another party for a change. That would be kind of nice, wouldn't it?
Yes, it would. We have Bernie Sanders from Vermont now in the Senate, who's a self-proclaimed socialist.
Uh-huh.
I found very interesting. It's good to have a different kind of opinion in the mix there.
And now we also have Lieberman, who is elected as an independent, different kind of independent. But, you know, much as I was against Lieberman, I think it's good that he's there as an independent because he's not allied necessarily to one party or another. Maybe if more people did that, these parties would stop having such a stranglehold on the whole system.
Right. And, well, I'd like to see some people in the Democratic Party either shift the whole party left or at least break off from the party and form some sort of party of their own.
Who do you think is a good candidate for 2008?
You know, honestly, among all the Democrats, I haven't heard a single one. Al Gore is the only one that has, you know, given me any impressed me at all any lately. So.
Yeah, well, he's busy making movies, so who knows? It's a possibility, I guess, though.
I think he wants to be the dark horse candidate.
Mm-hmm. It'll be interesting. It'll be, especially if Rudy Giuliani runs. You know, I think he'll be a very popular candidate, but I don't see him being popular outside of New York.
He would be just another prop president, just like our current one.
Uh-huh. Well, except I think he's able to string a sentence together a little better than George W.
Yeah.
But we'll see. All right, thanks for your call. Where are you calling from, by the way?
I'm calling from Huntington, West Virginia.
Okay, great. Thanks for calling.
Our stream is working.
All right, that's good to know. Yeah. That's good to know. Thanks for calling.
Have a good evening.
Our phone number is 631-632-WUSB. We only have a few minutes left. And I know people like to call when it's right on top of the hour, but you know what? We're not on the air then. We can't take the phone calls. Yeah, that's how it works. 631-632-9872. Your voice can be heard not only at the Hacker Podcast, but over the airwaves here on Long Island. And that was a call from Huntington, West Virginia, was it? And we have a Huntington here, you know, in New York. And I know you people listen out there, so feel free to pick up the phone and call. Maybe you're confused, because this is one of the areas we don't have to dial the area code. So if you are dialing 631-632-9872 from 631, it doesn't go through. I don't think. It might, but I don't think it does, because we can still dial seven digits here. So you just have to dial 632-9872. And if you're on campus, even less, as I demonstrated before, you just have to dial the last five digits, 2-9872. It's incredible. Okay, dear Emmanuel, two things alarmed me at school today. The first was that the USA has dropped 9 places to 53rd in the world in freedom of the press, according to Reporters Without Borders' annual ranking. The second was that our school's proxy censored access to the organization's website because, according to the proxy, it falls under the category of politics. Well, God forbid we do not want politics in the schools, do we? That'd be a horrible thing. Thanks, Robert, for writing in. Dear Off the Wall, is there a recording of Shadow of Long Island that was played a couple of weeks ago? I'd really like to hear it, and I missed the show that Tuesday, signed Thalanul. Well, actually, it took us a few days to piece it together, but it is up there now. It's the version that we aired over the radio, which means you're going to hear us begging for money every now and then. But it is online in the off-the-wall section, www.2600.com/off-the-wall. And if you want a broadcast-quality version, you got to pledge for it, wusb.fm or 631-632-6498. Leave your contact information and somebody will get back to you. Good evening. You're on the radio.
Manuel.
Yes, speak up, please.
Yes, I was just wondering if any of your friends or contacts happen to be doing the same things as people that I know in the past election as far as nobody wanting to vote. Everybody was really apathetic, saying it doesn't really count.
Well, you know, I can see that. I can see, and I was saying before, how it's not really going to make that much of a difference. But don't get me wrong. It was great to see the Republicans lose, and I think taking that step, you know, what do you lose by doing that? At least you give them a good smack in the face.
Yeah. I mean, I was trying to get people to vote, but it doesn't seem to be a popular thing anymore amongst younger people, even my college friends, which is usually people in universities who like to vote and be active.
Well, you see, there's two reasons for that. One is they make it very difficult for people on college campuses to vote, because sometimes they say you have to go back to where you came from originally, or they can't find your name or whatnot. But basically, college students and young people, people 18 to 21, they could be a very powerful voting bloc if they simply organized and made sure that they voted. I mean, they could have technically kept George W. Bush from winning the White House twice if they were in the right place at the right time and everybody was voting. It's especially disheartening because so many people of that age range are affected tremendously by what's going on around them, and they're also very in tune with what's going on around them, but they feel like they don't count, and the thing is they really do.
Yeah, that's definitely right. Well, thanks, Emmanuel.
All right, thanks for calling. And that's going to just about do it for us. We're out of time. And our email address, for those of you who hear this show on a delay and would like to call in but can't, you can write to us, otw@2600.com. OTW, of course, standing for Off the Wall. It's kind of like slow motion phone calls because, well, we'll read your mail, maybe. Depends if it's good. We'll read it and we'll respond to it, and then maybe you'll respond to us, and we'll have a little back and forth that'll take months to go through. If, though, you do want to call up next week at this time, write down the number. Write down the time, 6 p.m. to 7 p.m. every Tuesday night here on WUSB. And also, I want to point out, we have the Final Hope panel taking place this Thursday. That's right, this Thursday, Steve Rambam will be giving his talk, Privacy is Dead, Get Over It. And that's taking place over in Hoboken, New Jersey. Full details are available on our website, www.2600.com. And Steve is also going to be a special guest on Off the Hook tomorrow night. Admission is free to this event. It's the last panel, last talk of the Hope Conference. As you recall, the first time he was scheduled to do this in July, he was arrested right before he was going to give the presentation by the FBI. He's going to tell that story. He's going to tell all kinds of stories. He's going to show how easy it is to get information on anybody. And you do well to attend. Hoboken is very easy to get to from New York City. Only cost $1.50, and it's one stop away on a subway. All right, that's going to do it for us here this Tuesday night. Emmanuel Goldstein for Off the Wall. We'll see you next week.
Hi, this is Albert Collins. When I'm out in Stony Brook, I'll be listening to WUSB FM station. When I want to listen to some good blues, that's the station you tune into.